This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Josh Parrish and Athos Syrianos, and we are here live at De Casa in Ivanhoe, Melbourne, because tonight is Preston Lions season launch, and they're kicking off everything at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. That'll be going till 9 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, and the boys will be getting into the thick of things around then. But until that comes, we're obviously talking Evenings on FNR because there is plenty of news to get through, lots happening in the game and also overseas. We've had the Asian Champions League back in action this week. Unfortunately, Sydney FC couldn't get it done last night despite dominating for large parts of the game. That to come, plus plenty more. And boys, just a bit of housekeeping. Did you know that you guys can become a shareholder at FNR today?
I was aware of that, Louise, and it's a very exciting investment opportunity. So make sure you head on over to virtual.com because our crowdfunding campaign ends this Monday, the 18th of March.
That's exactly right. 4 days to go. And if you'd like to become an FNR shareholder, head to www.virtual.com/company/FNR. And remember, you can get involved at any time by tweeting to us at FNR_radio. Anything that you'd like to discuss over the next hour. Boys, let's get into the thick of things. As we said, in the Asian Champions League, Sydney FC couldn't get it done last night. They were defeated 1-0 by Kawasaki Frontale in Japan after going 82 minutes and not conceding a goal. The substitute came on for Kawasaki and was able to net one that proved to be the ultimate decider.
Yes, Manabu Saito was the man to make the difference in the 83rd minute. Sydney FC couldn't quite hold out, but I thought it was just a matter of time. They were slowly but surely encircling them. Sydney were dropping deeper and deeper onto the edge of their own box, and Kawasaki got what they deserved. I think Sydney were far too negative in this game. They didn't give Kawasaki anything to worry about on the other end. They had a few bright periods in the first half, but in the second half, it was all Kawasaki, and the stats really backed that out. 20 shots for the home side to 2, 9 on target to 2, 61% possession from Kawasaki, 720 passes to 477, and 8 corners to 1. It was complete domination, and I think the scoreline really flattered Sydney.
And is that what... Well, we spoke about that yesterday, Athos. We heard what Sydney FC's head coach, Steve Corica, was planning to do going into the game, and he said, basically, park the bus and we'll hit them on the counter. It seems like they executed that.
We know how hard it is for teams to win away in the Champions League. It's very rare that Australian clubs go and do it. I thought Sydney FC put a quite impressive defensive display. Alex Wilkinson, Ryan Grant, Michael Zullo all put in superb performances. But as Josh said, they didn't trouble them enough. Alex Bross didn't get anywhere near the service that he required, nor did Adam Lafondre. And you've got two very good players up there. Reza Gulshanashad came off the bench. He didn't really set the world on fire. So for Sydney FC, I think that's they'll be kicking themselves after that, because I really think they had a good chance to steal 3 points. But they're not in crisis discussions just yet. They're one draw out of two games, so hopefully they can turn things around. They are in the group of death, of course, so a win has to come very soon.
Well, that's exactly right. We did hear from Sydney FC's midfielder Brandon O'Neill after the game, and he said it was a sloppy goal to concede late, but there's plenty of positives to take from it. We've still got 4 winnable games, like Melbourne Victory, especially those ones at home, so if we can pick up as many points now, anything can happen. I guess keeping that in mind, Josh, what do you think that they can take from that performance into the next match?
I mean, they certainly were very stubborn defensively and managed to keep out Kawasaki. Andrew Redmayne was exceptional, making a number of really good saves, particularly a couple of shots from distance. And what really struck me about Brandon O'Neill's comments is he said, "We almost got there," which I don't know if it was a slip of the tongue from him, but it really represented the mentality that they went into that second half with. They were just trying to hold on and cling on for a point. Obviously, playing against the Japanese champions is always going to be a tough ask, but I didn't think they did enough to shut down the 38-year-old midfield maestro, Kengo Nakamura, who I was very impressed with. He's so great, and he was basically playing walking football out there and still completely dominating the match. The individual talent of Hasegawa and Kobayashi was something that they struggled to deal with on the flanks. And I think they went into the game too negatively, especially that second half. They could have got a lot more joy on the counter-attack, maybe if they tried to press up a little bit higher, move the team's block higher up the park and try and force some errors. But they failed to do so. And Reza Gushanashad being benched, I think, really hurt them. He wasn't very effective when he came on, apparently suffering from a neck injury. But the real headline absentee was Josh Bulante.
Exactly. There is a bit of transfer news going about that he's off to Pohang Steelers.
Yeah, a huge club over in Korea. I think Connor Chapman has played for them. And
Connor Chapman, of course, the new signing for Western United.
Yeah.
Their fourth signing that they've made so far.
So not a new destination for Australian players. Would be a massive move for him. I don't think his absence made a huge difference to the state of play. Maybe they could have used a little bit of his energy and tenacity.
It is another threat to goal too, as well.
Yeah, well, so. Look, how many goals does Josh Bulante score? One ripping strike every blue moon, and that's about it.
I think the real concern is why isn't Adam Lafondra, and as you say, the captain Alex Bross, netting the goals, and why aren't they being, instructed to at least try to convert some in these Asian Champions League games?
I'm sure that if they happen to get chances, then they'll try and score them, but they didn't have any chances. Adam Lafondra was virtually anonymous, had no service. Alice Brosk had one opportunity early, which was just the second phase of a corner, came back in and he headed straight at the goalkeeper. The only attacking player from Sydney showing any kind of intent was really Miloš Ninković, who I thought was fantastic, and he always is. Mm. He looks at home at this level, able to find space in really tight areas. His close control is so good to watch. And when you've got a player like him in the team, you're really doing him a disservice if you don't try and get numbers forward and support him, at least for counter-attacking opportunities, because he can find those passes. I thought Ivanovic did quite well when he came on, the youngster, but he only had about 15 minutes to impact the game. And apart from that, they didn't have much going forward. I mean, Michael Zullo had some good overlaps, but his deliveries were pretty off on the night, unfortunately. And that's the only route they had to goal. I think Steve Corica has to be a little bit more creative when he's coming up with solutions for these games.
So you think that the game was won and lost there in the midfield?
Absolutely, and I think also just the depth of the defensive line. Maybe they were worried about the pace of the wingers. Certainly not the strikers from Kawasaki. The big target man, Leandro Damião, was not going to be really a threat in behind. But they certainly sat very deep, maybe to protect Alex Wilkinson, mm-hmm. who I thought had a pretty decent game. Ben Warren, less so. But I just thought the entire team was just sitting too deep in that second half, and they needed to try and move the team out. And they couldn't hold possession either, which meant they couldn't get out of their own half. So it was a difficult situation for them to be in, but you need to display a little bit more attacking intent to really give Kawasaki something to worry about on the other end, rather than just waiting and hoping, because the team that Kawasaki are, they're so good in possession, they're eventually going to break you down.
Athos, what do you make of the school of thought of, clubs really playing their own style rather than trying to counter what the opposition is doing? So we know that Sydney FC is really quite attacking. That's what we see in the A-League. We haven't really seen that in the past couple of rounds, though. They've scraped by 1-0 results over and over. But the usual Sydney FC that we know are really quite attacking. So for them to sit off so far, would you say that that's something that Steve shouldn't do and Corica shouldn't do in the upcoming matches? Because, if you play to your own strengths, then you're more likely to get a result.
Well, I'm no football coach, but I would assume that most coaches look to achieve a balance of both. That's why they go through so much research during the week about their opposition, because you can't really go in blind and expect that your strength is just going to overpower them. I think Sydney FC going to Japan against what appeared to be a superior opposition went in with a plan to more so stop them and maybe grab one on the counter. As we know, Sydney FC aren't the quickest team going around, nor are they the most polished. So it was always going to be difficult for them to score goals. But there is also that school of thought that perhaps they gave their opposition too much respect, and this is why they sat deep so much. And who knows, after learning that, they may have learned a few valuable lessons from this game and realised that if we actually pressed them, we could have actually scored a goal. So the return leg in Sydney in a few months' time will certainly be very interesting. And if Sydney do press them and do try to score goals, I think they would have learned a very good lesson there.
Yeah, I think they gave them too much respect. I mean, Kawasaki are a well-coached team. and they've got some good players. Obviously, you know, Leandro Damião, for example, they kept him reasonably quiet, but he's been linked with, you know, Tottenham Hotspur in the past and has played games for the Brazilian national team. Kobayashi is a good operator. Obviously, the younger player Hasegawa was outstanding on the night, and Kengo Nakamura being a legend of Japanese football, but he's 38
and still playing.
Yeah, amazing.
In the midfield.
Yeah,
it's not like he's, you know, a forward.
No,
isolated up the front there.
I mean, he pales in comparison to the former Sydney FC legend still playing down the road at the age of 52, King Kazu. But I did think they showed them too much respect. They aren't teaming with individual talent. I just think they're a well-structured side who knows how to use the ball well. And, you know, they could have gone at them a little bit, tried to maybe press the likes of Nakamura. Because Alex Brosk, that's kind of the usual role he occupies. He's both a striker and also a little bit of a withdrawn defensive option who can sit on that number six from the opposition and try and stop them playing. And he couldn't get near him. I don't know. It wasn't a physical limitation because Nakamura, you know, barely raises his speed above a jog during the game, but he's just so positionally intelligent, it seemed to elude him constantly. And they didn't have... I mean, most of Sydney's attacks, especially at this level, come from forcing opposition mistakes and playing on the counter-attack. And that's what we saw during the last few games of the Asian Champions League group stage last season, where they actually managed to get some joy. And they need to get back to that. Maybe pressing not all the way up to the opposition goalkeeper,
but having a balance.
Pressing in the middle third of the field and setting traps there and trying to gain on the break. Obviously, they're going to struggle to, you know, keep the ball and have long spells of possession and break the opposition down that way. That's not really the team that they are. But if they can play a little bit more like the Graham Arnold teams of old, trying to force mistakes and counter quickly in the middle third of the field, then I think they'll do a lot better and we'll be able to actually find a route to goal, because this is two matches in a row where they haven't scored and haven't really looked like scoring.
But they've done something that Melbourne Victory hasn't done, and they've gotten 1 point at least from their opening two games. So, as you say, going into the next four games, that is pretty crucial for them. And we look at some of the other results in their group, and Shanghai SIPG, who they will take on in Sydney, actually lost to Ulsan Hyundai 1-0 last night, which is another mixed result because now Shanghai sit second on 3 points with a win and a loss. So
tight group.
Tight group. Very tight group despite the heavy competition.
That it is, and we do know how tough that group is. A great week for Japanese football, however. Sanfrecce and Sydney FC's opponents last night, Kawasaki, both getting up with wins. And it's almost ironic because a lot of the commentary during the week has been that the Japanese perhaps aren't taking the ACL as seriously as some of the other nations.
Well, Sanfrecce don't. They put out half their reserves and they still beat Melbourne Victory, which is very disappointing for the Victory. I thought they were going to get something out of that game.
And I would agree with you, Josh.
I'm not sure whether the presence of Honda incentivised the Japanese, the local players, to lift, but it's been a good week for Japanese football, and perhaps they're taking it a bit more seriously, or the players on the field are taking it a bit more seriously than we first thought.
And let's not forget Kashima Antlers getting a handy point against Shandong Luang as well. So they're top of their group, Group E. Sydney were always going to be up against it. No, don't get me wrong, in this group. Group H is just packed with talent. Ulsan, Shanghai SIPG, obviously we know the financial might that they have and the individual talent. Kawasaki Frontale being the Japanese champions. I never thought Sydney FC were going to get out of the group, but I think they should be, you know, making a little bit more of a fist of it than they currently are, because the approach right now is negative, and I think their fans would probably prefer they went for it, maybe risked shipping 2, 3, or 4 goals than sitting back on their haunches and losing 1-0 every game.
And it also opens up the discussion as to, do you have to sacrifice the A-League for Asian Champions League success?
I think, or with the scheduling now, the FFA has been much kinder.
They've done well to make sure that the teams in the Champions League this season, with Victory in Sydney, get adequate time to travel and to train. Victory and Sydney both had the week off this week, the split round. So scheduling's got in favour of the A-League sides. They just haven't been able to do the job on the field.
And I guess we'll only know in the coming rounds what effect that might have. Melbourne Victory take on Brisbane Roar this weekend at home, and Sydney FC also have a home game, so I guess that's pretty fortunate for them. But there's been some other news around the A-League clubs, we know that there's something going on at Adelaide United, Athos, with their head coach, Marco Kurz.
That we do, and this news broke a few weeks ago when Adelaide United played Brisbane Roar, and it was that Brisbane Roar were circling interest for Marco Kurz. As we know, Brisbane haven't yet announced the replacement for John Aloisi, who left the club a few months ago. And we thought at that stage Marco Kurz was the favourite. And then the talk sort of died down a bit, but they've increased once again. It is believed that Marco Kurz is having a bit of issues with Adelaide's Dutch-based consortium owners. So there is that going on in the background. Kurz, of course, is a great coach at Adelaide. They're currently sitting fifth on the table. He's won them an FFA Cup. So interesting to see how that pans out. But from what we're seeing, Brisbane are chasing him quite hard.
Yeah. So reports came out, Josh, that basically Marco Kurz had requested a meeting with the chairman of Adelaide United, Piet van der Pol, and the Dutchman hasn't actually responded in more than 20 days. So Kurz was basically wanting some clarity around his future, as you can understand. Now, his two-year deal actually ends in June, so that's not too far away. Kurz said, and I quote, "I'm still waiting for a call back. That's the situation, but I have a lot of points to discuss with him. I would like to understand what the goal is for the season, and I want to know what the goal is long-term for the club." And you touch on the fact that he's been linked with Brisbane Roar. Well, he's come out and said that Brisbane Roar hasn't actually contacted him at all. So he's dismissed those rumours completely. But on top of the instability around Marco Kurz's future, Adelaide United have 8 players coming off contract at the end of the season. So, again, you can see why he wants clarity around what's happening with his position and whether he stays on or whether another A-League club, as you touch on, might pick him up.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting situation. I mean, I'm not as huge a fan of Marco Kurz as a lot of people. The Adelaide United supporters seem to love him, though, and the players seem to get around him as well. But he's got to be a target for Brisbane and probably Wellington if Mark Redan leaves, because they play that tough sort of football. You know, very, very fast, very aggressive, and the fans in Adelaide have taken to him. I'm not sure if the board has, and the ownership situation at Adelaide is so strange, as we've covered before. We don't really know who they are. Van der Pol is the
We know they're chairman. Dutch, that's about
he's it. he's the representative, and he's of the consortium, and even he is a little bit of a mysterious character. But the fact that he hasn't responded to his own head coach.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
For changing the way they decide who hosts the World Cup, in that every member federation has a vote, they've gone back to the old deciding behind closed doors, which, as we know, caused a lot of problems for Australia and is in its bid for the 2022 World Cup. So you can understand why Australia is a bit hesitant and perhaps a bit anxious heading into that bid.
Yes, and basically there's a 37-man council, FIFA council, that will decide it in March 2020. But expressions of interest have to be submitted by March 15th. So that's tomorrow.
That's Friday, yeah.
That is tomorrow. And there are other hopefuls, which include Colombia and also South Africa. But I want to see it here on Australian soil, like many people, because, A, when you look at a bid and the bid book, and a component of that is having good infrastructure to obviously field the games.
Oh, there's no question Australia could host the World Cup tomorrow.
And we have the infrastructure popping up here, there and everywhere. You look at the Western Sydney Wanderers' new stadium, that looks beautiful. And it's happened so quickly and quite seamlessly, to be honest.
We haven't heard boo from the Wanderers building their stadium. Every week there's a problem with Tottenham Hotspur and the building of their stadium. I think there was something that happened just on Monday. But the Wanderers, they started building two, 3 years ago, when all of a sudden it's built. We haven't heard one problem with it whatsoever. So,
unfortunately for Tottenham, they can't even take corners, they realised.
No, they can't. But a big congratulations to everyone involved in building the new Bankwest Stadium in Western Sydney. I'll certainly be making an away trip there very soon, and 100%. It'll house very... a number of great sporting events there, I'm sure.
Yeah, it looks like an absolute footballing cathedral and something we've been crying out for years and years and years. And hopefully the Proposed new stadium in the west of Melbourne looks something half as good as that, because, you know, the vision is enticing, and I hope that's enough to get the Wanderers fans back through the gates next season. If not, well, maybe they can try and go after Frank Ribery.
No, I think the Wanderers fans will be sold with that stadium. Yeah. I think that they've all been getting around it. But if you are a Wanderers fan, please get involved and tell us what you think at @FNR_radio on Twitter, or if you are joining us live on Facebook, comment below and we'll get through as many of your comments as we can throughout the next 20 minutes. Now, going back to some of the comments made by Chris Nicu, he said that he's actually planning some international trips to just feel and suss out what the AFC is going to do, to try and persuade the important people to vote in favour of us, which I think is good. They need to get out there and try and, you know, build face and basically reputation.
Well, if previous reports are anything to go by, the AFC officials love a good lobster, so as long as he can cater to them properly.
Really? Lobster?
I didn't know that. Yeah, that was something they demanded for the buffets at Australian ACL games a while back. That was
a story. That's an odd fact, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they also love covering up all the advertising with tape, and there's some eccentricities in Asia, is my point, so you've got to schmooze the right people if you want to get exactly what you want, and that's just the way the AFC unfortunately works.
I have a question for both of you. Do you think if the Matildas win the FIFA Women's World Cup, that'll boost our chances to host the 2023 World Cup?
Well, maybe they can do it like Eurovision. If you win, you get to host it next time. No, I think that's a very likely.
That's a good incentive, though. If you win it, you get to host it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it would work for every nation.
But as we know, FIFA do like to branch out, and is why they went out to places like South Africa to grow the game there, as you know we've heard. So I don't know if winning it will throw a whole heap of weight behind it, but it will certainly show that in winning the World Cup that here in Australia we take women's football very seriously, which we do, and we should have every right to host it, because we certainly are capable of it, Louise.
And again, for me, it doesn't come down to the fact that you know, if you win a World Cup, you get to host it. I think the one thing that we all know and that we've all spoken about is the fact that we are in an odd time zone compared to the rest of the world. So it affects broadcasting and that side of things.
It's a good time zone for Asia, though, for China and for Japan, not so much for the Middle East, who've been strangely rewarded by the AFC in Saudi Arabia. That was one of the stories this week. They've been pirating BN Sports coverage from Qatar over in Saudi Arabia. And the AFC have decided to just stream games directly to them rather than go through that, which is a little bit of an incredible decision. But yes, Australia, tough market for overseas TV, and I think that has really been an impediment in the past. But we know from the Asian Cup, and from the Matildas crowds that we've seen recently, that Australia will get around international tournaments, and I think it's about time we hosted a big one.
Oh, I agree, because the last one that we hosted was in 1993.
Yeah.
And that was a youth tournament.
I mean, I guess the Asian Cup in 2015 would be the most recent example, and the atmosphere and the crowds, compared to other Asian Cups that we've seen, especially the most recent one, that was a rip-roaring success.
We saw some good crowds for games where Australia wasn't even involved, which said a lot about our willingness to get behind.
And even our multiculturalism, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the diasporic communities really got around that tournament, and I think they would for a Women's World Cup as well, you'd hope.
And we know Australia is bidding to take part in the Suzuki Cup as well, tournament among the Southeast Asian sides. Could that be another tournament that Australia hosts down the line?
Well, you know which tournament Australia's missed out on, though? According to the Sydney Morning Herald, the 2020 Copa America, we were secretly bidding for, a story that's just come out in the past hour. According to Don Bossi and Vince Rigari at the Sydney Morning Herald, FFA secretly bidded to host South America's showpiece football event and was close to coming through. They were invited to bid by CONMEBOL's commercial rights holders, IMG, and they hastily put together a bid document, jumping at the opportunity, but they've been knocked back in favour of a joint Colombia-Argentina bid. So
keep it in South America, CONMEBOL, I think, yeah.
CONMEBOL is looking to internationalise. We see those friendlies that Brazil and Argentina have been playing in the Middle East. They did host a Copa America Centenario, special 100-year anniversary event in the USA, which makes a little bit more sense than Australia. But
and didn't the Asian Cup winners, Qatar, they were invited to
participate.
As well
as Japan.
Exactly.
And despite missing out, as it says here, there remains a chance that the Socceroos could still take part in the 2020 tournament as one of the two invitational teams. So as long as it doesn't clash with the 2022 World Cup qualifying campaign, FFA is apparently keen to get Australia over there, and I absolutely don't see why not. Why turn down the chance to play competitive games against some of the best teams
in the world?
Oh,
because some of the A-League clubs might be a little bit angry about that. Well, that's why.
It'll be in FIFA window, so they won't have to worry.
There you go.
I tell you what. Now, while we're abroad, one of our Australians, and we touched on this a little bit last night.
Milos Deganek.
Well, actually, did you want to say anything about Milos Deganek and his Asian Champions League run?
Well,
because Al Hilal actually won.
Yeah, they beat Al Duhail, who boasts the very talented striker from the Qatar Asian Cup winning side. Of course, I think he was out with an injury for that game, unfortunately. But the top scorer, Al Muez Ali, does play for Al Duhail, as does Ali Afif and a number of members of that that Asian Cup winning team, and Mehdi Benatia, who moved over from Juventus recently in a headline move. Yes, Al Hilal won 3-1 at home with Bafetimbi Gomi, a name familiar to a lot of football fans,
that
scoring, as well as Carlos Eduardo. And unfortunately, our man, Milos Deganek, didn't seem to take part in that game. Oh, wait, sorry. He did play.
He started.
My apologies.
Full 90
my
minutes.
Yes. It's listing him here on the left side of midfield, which is why I didn't see him in the lineup.
But he's actually
Are
playing
you using
quite
Google
well.
Lineups?
Yes, that's the one. I think he has been playing in midfield, in central midfield, which is kind of bizarre. But it's not something that's foreign to Australian players playing in Asia, because Connor Chapman, in an interview in The Age today, said he'd been moved into holding midfield roles when he was playing in Korea. I didn't expect that for Deganek, but that seems to be the role he's been given in the team, and all power to him, because they are a powerhouse of Asian football.
That they are, and plenty more Asian Champions League to come over the next few weeks. And great to see, if Australian teams aren't necessarily doing well, that our Australian players are still doing very well in Asia.
I mean, if you get to play with Salem Al-Dosari, the captain of Saudi Arabia, Carlos Eduardo...
Is he playing with Giovinco as well?
Sebastian Giovinco, Bafetimbi Gomi. It's a star-studded team.
Pretty strong team.
He's got even more stars in his domestic lineup. A number of those players that were actually left out of the Asian Champions League squad due to the foreign player restrictions. But I think Al Hilal are a huge chance to actually win this tournament this season. I think they've got just a stacked squad. And that's the toughest group. Never mind Sydney's. That group with Al Duhail, Al Hilal, Al Ayn, and Estegal in the west side. That is the toughest group in the whole competition, and Al Hilal looks like the best team in it. So, you know, I reckon they are a huge chance to actually win the whole thing.
Well, all the best to Deganek. Staying with Aussies abroad, our midfielder, the Matildas midfielder, Alex Chidiak, played last night for Atletico Madrid women, and that was in their 3-0 win over Rayo Vallecano. She came on in the 73rd minute as a substitute, and the team took a valuable 3 points heading into their weekend's top of the table clash with Barcelona.
Sold out. Clash.
It is sold out. It'll be played at the Wanda Metropolitano. More than 50,000 tickets have been sold, as you mentioned, Athos. What an occasion for one of the rising Matildas.
When I finally get my hands on a Matildas jersey, which is, as we covered, sold out in men's sizes this week, I think I'm going to get number 19 with Chidiak on the back. Or is it number 23? I think it's 23 that she wears. Anyway, she is such a fantastic footballer, and what an experience for her to play in front of huge crowds in a quality league over in Spain. I think she is framing as a potential starter for the Matildas in the coming World Cup, and is a very positive, creative influence in the middle of that midfield. So just great stuff from Alex. I really don't have anything negative to say about her playing in Spain. She has been left on the bench a few times, but it seems as if she's breaking into the first team now.
And yeah, playing in front of big crowds will give her a good warm-up ahead of that World Cup final and all the semi-finals that she'll be involved
100%.
In too.
That's exactly right. Atletico Madrid are doing quite well. They're sitting top of the table, 66 points, 22 games won out of a possible 23, no draws, and they've only lost one game remarkably, and they've scored outright the most amount of goals, which is 79. Now, Barcelona, we talk about them, they are just behind on 60 points, 19 games they've won out of 23, and they've scored 10 less than Atletico Madrid, so... it'll be a blockbuster clash. I'm just sad that I don't get to watch it over there.
Yeah, but you'll be able to watch plenty of A-League, and we've got the ins and outs right here. They've just been announced, and Adelaide take on Perth tomorrow night in Adelaide. A big clash considering both sides had the week off last week. Nikola Milojosnic returns from that injury he picked up against Melbourne City, as does Michael Jakobsen, and Isaac Richards and Apostolos Stamatopoulos have both been promoted to the first side. And they come in for Daniel Margus and George Blackwood, both of whom are out with international duty.
Those cursed Oli Roos. I'm sure Marco Kurz is furious. As for Perth Glory, Alex Grant and Tommy Mosella finally returned from injury. Fabio Ferreira promoted, and you know who else?
Jacob Italiano.
Your favourite. He's finally in a squad. I don't know if he'll be admitted because
that's just the provisional squad.
They've got provisional squads. You know, they need to admit two for the match day.
Fingers crossed.
Brendan Santaleb and Jake Brimmer, who just signed a contract extension. He's not selected. Brandon Wilson is away with the Oli Roos.
That's exactly right. And that'll be a great clash.
Yeah. 7:20 local time, 7:50 Eastern Daylight. At Cooper Stadium in Adelaide, I think it'll be a draw. Perth Glory have been up and down with their form recently, and Adelaide have good home records. So I'm going 1-1.
I'm going to say I think Perth will just sneak over. It'll be a gritty 1-0 win. We know both teams hate losing, and I know the week off might have a bit of an impact, but I think Perth Glory will just get over the line.
I think it'll be a draw as well, Josh, to be honest.
Mm. Well, the other game, one of the most anticipated games of this round is the F3 Derby in Newcastle. We know the Mariners lost 8-2 last week, so they'll be looking to get back on a good side with a new coach, Alan Stajic. And the Jets have named quite a strong side. In comes Ronald Vargas, Apaya, Nick Cowburn, Costa Petrados, Pan Langlios, and Angus Thurtgate. And they replace Ben Kantorowski, who injured his calf and is out for another week, and Johnny Kutrumbas and Joey Champness both miss out due to international duty.
As does Ivan Vuitsa. And they are taking on the Central Coast Mariners. And what a game this is going to be, because it's obviously the former Matildas head coach, Alan Stajic, his first A-League match.
And he has promoted Andrew Hall, the previously suspended by the club internally for disciplinary reasons last week. He gets a fresh clean slate to start with a new coach. Tom Hiaria comes back from injury. Connor Payne and is promoted, and Mario Chabau also returns. Charles Mbombwa is not selected, nor is Michael Glasshock. Tommy Orr, Aidan O'Neill, Kai Rolls, Matt Simon, and Corey Romero are unavailable for various reasons. O'Neill and Rolls, two of those selected for Oli Roos duty. So a strong squad for Central Coast, still a number of notable absentees with, you know, all as out for the season. O'Neill and Rolls usually starters. Simon suspended still. I don't think they'll win this game, unfortunately, even with the new coach bounce. I'm going 2-1 to the Jets.
I think even though it is Stadge's first game in charge, and we didn't see sides be very much buoyed and reinvigorated by a new coach, I think it's just too big of a task to play. The Newcastle Jets, who are looking to break into that top six, I think the Jets will win comfortably 3-1.
Okay. Well, I'm going to sit on the fence again, and I'm going to say they're going to settle for a draw. Moving on, Melbourne Victory take on Brisbane Roar on Saturday night, and that is at our good old favourite Marvel Stadium.
George Tanikian's favourite stadium in all of Australia, the one that's built on a car park, as he reminds us every week.
Yes. Kickoff is at 7:50pm Australian Eastern Daylight Time, and the ins for Melbourne Victory, Josh.
Yes, Melbourne Victory returning from their Asian Champions League exploits, just losing heartbreakingly in the last 10 minutes over there in Japan. Thomas Deng is on international duty after missing the previous match through injury. James Donaghy is suspended. Elvis Kamsoba still out with that knee problem. Jorg Niedermeyer returns from suspension. Ola Toivonen is promoted. Ramat Akbari is as well. And Carl Valeri comes back from injury. Obviously, he came off the bench in their last ACL game. And Terry Antonis is in that squad after missing on Tuesday night through a slight injury. So good to see him back. I think Melbourne Victory and well positioned for this one. If you look at Brisbane Roar's ins and outs, Thomas Christensen, Stefan Nigro come in, Davia Holman, Mork, Hingert, O'Till, and D'Agostino all out through injury, and Agostino is on international duty. So those long-term absentees for the Roar have made it tough for them. Obviously, some of the young players coming up, like Dylan Wenzel-Halls, who's been on the periphery all season and suddenly come into his own. Ellie Babal is a huge new addition to the squad after just signing in the past week or so. And Isaac Powell's looked good, but I just don't think they have enough to beat Melbourne Victory away from home.
It's a tough task, and Victory are so good, especially at Marvel Stadium, Graham, where they very rarely lose. And Victory are in dire need of a win. They haven't won in so long. I think it was six games in all competitions that they haven't had any success. So they'll be looking to get back onto winning ways and look to close the gap between them and Sydney FC and maybe jump into second, hopefully.
Yes, there's no reason why they can't get 3 points from this upcoming home clash.
I think Victory are going to roll them as well. I'm going for a three-goal margin.
I think this win's been a long time coming, and they're up against quite a vulnerable Brisbane Roar side, so I think it should be another comfortable Victory win.
Elsewhere, Wellington Phoenix are hosting the Western Sydney Wanderers. Nathan Burns has been promoted for the Phoenix. Alex Rufer returns from suspension, and Stephen Taylor has also been promoted. Sapreet Singh is out as he's been suspended, and the ins for the Western Sydney Wanderers, Nick.
Nick Fitzgerald, Alex Baumjohan.
That's what I was looking at.
Rael Llorente, Nick Suman. I'm not even going to try and pronounce Andrea's last name.
Agamemnos.
Thank you, the resident Greek in the room. And Adrian Valenti all come in with Taz Mutakoudis, Kieran Backus, and Abraham Madjok on Oliru's duty, much to Marco Kurz's chagrin. Marcus Babbel's chagrin, mixing up my Germans now. And Jack Greenwood is not selected for this round. Josh Risden still out for a further 2 weeks due to that injury he suffered at the Asian Cup. And Mark Tokic is out for a couple of weeks as well. So a lot of big ins for the Western Sydney Wanderers. They had a really bare squad last time. And this new boy, Andrea Agamemnos, is that correct? Youth team product from the Wanderers, and they have so many of those.
They do.
So
he shouldn't be crying.
They do have quite a talented youth team. Obviously, won the NYL last year, made the final this year. So he's got plenty of good young players to draw on. Except if they keep doing so well, they'll all get selected for Oliver's duty, and he can't have that. I think Wellington Phoenix will win this game.
It's a tough task for both sides. Wellington, as good as they are, they'll be looking to get themselves as high on the table as possible, whereas the Wanderers are still mathematically a chance to make the finals, as we discussed last night on the program, still 10 points adrift of the sixth place. I think it's Melbourne City in there. So both teams have a lot to play for. I think Wellington will continue their form from last week and really look to go two on the bounce and put some pressure on Melbourne Victory, and as the season prolongs, look more and more likely to host a final.
And the final one, quickly before we wrap up, boys, Sydney FC host Melbourne City at 7 o'clock p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time on Sunday. The ins for Sydney FC, Josh.
Paolo Retre, Alex Brosk, and Jacob Tratt. Obviously, two of those three were in the squad at the ACL game and played as well, started. Josh Brillante is not selected for this second successive game with this transfer speculation surrounding him, probably off to Pohang Steelers in Korea. Daniel De Silva is still out through that hyperextension of his elbow. Trent Bahaja, Chris Avella, and Sim De Jong are all long-term absentees. On the Melbourne City side of things, Richie Delatt, Harrison Delbridge, Bart Schenkeveld, Dario Vidicic, and Rami Nadjarina all back in. So a handy list of ins from injury, suspension, promotion, all sorts. Riley McGree, Nathaniel Atkinson, and Lockie Wales are all on Ollie Roo's duty, although we haven't heard Warren Joyce moan about it so far.
No,
maybe
we'll
save it for post-game when they lose. No, I think Sydney FC are a good chance in this game. Obviously, the ACL hangover is tough, but you know, as your recent article proved, Athos, that might be a little bit of a myth.
Yeah, we know sides statistically in the A-League win their A-League game after travelling from overseas. I think this will be a tough game. I'm actually predicting a Melbourne City upset in Sydney. I think they'll turn things around.
Okay, well, there you go. And just a quick one before we go. I don't read too much into this, but I did see Dylan Pariah follow Western United on Instagram.
Well, I have heard rumours of that as well, Louise, on the grapevine. I think there will be a number of young Melbourne City players who go over to Western and maybe to Victory as well at the end of the season. I mean, they've got such a talented young squad in their MPL2 side, but they're not getting too many minutes under Warren Joyce, so I wouldn't be surprised to see a number of them change clubs. But we are just about out of time here, broadcasting live from Docasa in Ivanhoe. Make sure you stick around for the Pioneers. And then after that, at 8 p.m., we'll have the Preston season launch coming up. So join myself, David Svetkovsky, and a number of special guests for that. The function space here already starting to fill up. It's going to be a fantastic night.
Great stuff, Josh. Thank you for your company, and thank you for your company, Athos. And like he said, stay tuned and more to come.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.